So good morning, everybody. I want to welcome you all here to our Sunday sit. I'm Lyndall Johnson, one of the local Dharma leaders, and we're going to be doing again things a little bit differently, similar to what we did last week. We don't have, now as most of you know, we've been focusing on the Zen ox herding pictures this year. And so today I'll continue our discussion of picture 9, Return to the Source, that Jerry introduced us to last week with such a really lovely talk. Okay, so here is the picture. Return to the origin, back to the source. And in this picture here, we might remember the earlier picture where there was just a big circle, the Japanese Enso symbol, that signifies emptiness and that which holds everything. So there was nothing really from the world in that picture at all. But with this picture, we're now returning back to this world of form, and we see the tree looks like a weeping willow. Flowers blooming on the ground. Maybe there's a stream flowing by. Beautiful picture of nature, representation of nature. The ox is nowhere to be seen. The ox herder is nowhere to be seen. Just this representation of nature. And then the poem. Too many steps have been taken, returning to the root and the source. Better to have been blind and deaf from the beginning. Dwelling in one's true abode, unconcerned with and without. The river flows tranquilly on, and the flowers are red. So taking a moment to reconnect with the picture, with the poem. Maybe noticing things you didn't see before. Maybe it's bringing up feelings that weren't there the first time you looked at it. So I'll stop the sharing now. So with this picture 9, we have this beautiful representation of nature. And last week, for those who were here, Jerry gave a really nice introduction to this picture, and I'll continue to explore it this week. And as I mentioned before, and as Jerry mentioned in his talks, there's a real switch here from picture 8 last month. In that picture, we went deep into formlessness with just that circle, representing emptiness as well as all, as that which holds all things. And now in picture 9, things are different. As I said earlier, the ox herder isn't there, the ox isn't there, but we're not in the formless anymore either. As Jerry talked about last week, we're moving back to form. And he quoted from one of our favorite commentators on the Zen ox herding pictures, the teacher Martine Batchelor, and she says, the practice does not stop at emptiness. If we attach ourselves to emptiness, it could lead to separation and isolation. So we have to go one stage further, re-entering the world. And so this is what we do in this picture. We return to form. But one of the things that especially strikes me with this picture is not only that there is a return to form, but the form that we're returning to. And as we see this picture and look at this picture, we see that here we return to the forms of nature. That beautiful willow tree with the leaves undulating, the flowers blooming, the stream flowing. In this picture, we don't return, at least not yet, to the ox herder or the ox or to our own human society. We return to the world of nature. And I think this is something that's significant and maybe worth reflecting on. It makes me think of the deep connection that there is between nature and the teachings of the Buddha. And it also makes me think that just, you know, being in nature and reflecting on nature is a really nice and helpful transition point as we make our journey, you know, back down from this emptiness, maybe down from the mountaintop into a place where we live our daily lives. So when we're in nature, it's a place where we can begin to maybe start integrating and understanding what we've glimpsed on the mountaintop without having to be completely meshed in all of the cares of our daily lives. And I think most definitely we know that in Buddhism, we're encouraged to connect with nature. And we certainly see that in these ox herding pictures, these Zen ox herding pictures, where all of these poems and paintings almost draw upon scenes from nature and aspects of nature. And we see that too with the Zen practice in general. You know, when you look at all of the haiku and other poems that are part of the Zen tradition, these are all about moments in nature. Seasonal qualities, the cherry blossoms, the autumn leaves, change and the fragility of life. So much about nature. But this isn't something that's just characteristic of the Zen tradition. It's in our tradition as well. For example, we remember that in the Satipatthana Sutta, the discourse on the four foundations of mindfulness, which is one of the key teachings about the practice of meditation, the Buddha tells his followers to go into the forest, to sit at the foot of a tree, to sit in a quiet and empty place and meditate. He really encourages them to meditate in the quiet and peacefulness of nature. And this is something that we do too, sometimes in our daily lives, sometimes when we go on retreat. Go to a quiet, peaceful, natural place. And we also know that according to tradition, the Buddha himself, before his enlightenment, sat at the foot of a tree where he vowed that he would sit until he attained awakening and his deep insights into suffering. And we also know that when Mara, the god of delusion, came to tempt him and challenged his right to seek awakening and ask him, well, who do you think you are to sit here and do this? The Buddha touched the earth and he called on the earth as his support and his witness. So there is this sense of deep connection with the earth and nature as support for our practice. We see this too in the precepts where respect for nature is an important part of the tradition in the sense that the precepts encourage us to refrain from harming not just human beings, but all living beings. So there's this sense that all beings deserve our care. And so I think it's meaningful that in the ox herding pictures, when we begin our journey out of emptiness and back into form, that we begin with nature. The Burmese monk and teacher Sayadaw Utejaniya says that when we study Dharma, we study nature. And I think we have a sense that this is really true, because what do we see when we come close to nature? We see the truths of the Dharma. For one thing, in nature, we see the reality of change. We're aware of the cycles of day and night, the changing seasons. I think that's something we're especially close to right now at this time of year, as we're experiencing this transition from summer into autumn. And I know I've really been feeling it in these last weeks. Even though we're having a kind of unusual autumn with a lot of sun and warm temperatures, when I go out for a walk, I'm still seeing the leaves beginning to turn color. And I'm really aware of how it gets light later in the morning and it gets dark earlier in the evening, and the chill in the air in the early morning. I mean, this morning when I went out for a walk, I needed to put my coat on, which is something I haven't needed to do. A sweater has been enough, but it's getting chilly. Chilly in the evening too. And with these changes, I know that winter is on its way. You know, it's not here yet, but we know these changes are happening. And nature also reminds us of the cycle of life, how with all things there's birth, then there's aging, and finally death. This is something that Jerry talked about last week when he mentioned a talk that our founding teacher, Rodney Smith, gave about this ninth Oxherding picture. You know, emphasizing how it's important that we reflect on the fact that we're part of this cycle of birth and death too, and that just as we're born, we will die. Mary Oliver puts this really beautifully, these sentiments, in her poem, Lines Written in Days of Growing Darkness, and she says it more beautifully than I could ever say. She says, every year we have been witness to it, how the world descends into a rich mash in order that it may resume. And therefore, who would cry out to the petals on the ground to stay, knowing as we must, how the vivacity of what was is married to the vitality of what will be. I don't say it's easy. But what else will do if the love one claims to have for the world be true? So let us go on, though the sun be swinging east, and the ponds be cold and black, and the sweets of the year be doomed. So this is just a beautiful expression of that sense of birth and death and rebirth that we have with these changing seasons. Another thing that nature gives us is a sense of the connectivity of all things. You know, we see in nature the reality of change and death and dissolution, but we also see that all of this isn't chaos. There's an orderliness to these processes. There's a sense of connectivity. There's a sense of cause and effect. And these too are teachings of the Dharma. And we see when we are close to nature that we don't exist in a vacuum. We're part of something larger than ourselves, this web of life. And a really beautiful expression of interconnectivity is the Mahayana teaching about Indra's net. The Chinese patriarch Du Xun, who lived during the first century AD, describes it this way. And he says, the manner in which all dharmas impenetrate is like an imperial net of celestial jewels extending in all directions without limit. As for the imperial net of heavenly jewels, it is known as Indra's net, a net which is made entirely of jewels, because of the clarity of the jewels, they are all reflected in and enter into each other ad infinitum. Within each jewel, simultaneously is reflected the whole net. Ultimately, nothing comes or goes. So here is another expression of interconnectivity and that sense of emptiness in the sense that everything is connected. Everything is changing. Nothing ultimately comes or goes, that we also find in the interconnectivity of nature. So there's all these aspects of the teachings of the Dharma that we see when we're close to nature. And I think this is something that many of us really sense, and we sense it even if we've only started practicing, and even with if we feel that we don't really understand these big esoteric concepts. We often find that it's in nature, and when we're close to nature, that we experience some of these truths. When we really feel a sense of change, of impermanence, of connectivity, and where maybe we have a little sense, little bit less of that sense of self. So I think this ninth ox herding picture can be a really important reminder for us of the need to return to that experience of nature. And there's a sense here of when we're in nature, of being with that from which all things arise, the place from which all these different forms of nature unfold and return. So we really return to the source. And I think, too, one of the most important things we learn as we study Dharma and nature is that we, too, are part of nature. And this is something that Sayadaw Utejaniya really emphasizes in his teachings, that as humans, we're part of nature, and the workings of our own mind are part of the workings of nature. And with that understanding, we remember that what goes on in our minds, well, it really isn't so personal. It really isn't all about me. It's more about the nature of the mind. It's the working of nature. And so that can really be a useful reminder in practice when we struggle through all these thoughts and emotions that we feel are so much all about us, to remember, you know, this is nature. This is nature. This is the nature of the mind. And maybe we can avoid getting so caught up in judgment and in self-blame and just know, oh, this is the nature of being a human being. We notice nature in ourselves also, as through the meditation on the four elements that we did earlier this morning, earth, air, fire, and water. In ancient times, the understanding was that all matter actually was made of these four elements. And of course, now with modern science, we have a little different idea of the elements that make up all matter. We have all of the elements of the periodic table, but there's still this sense of commonality, things in nature sharing these elements, the rocks, the trees, the oceans, our own bodies, all various combinations of these elements. So there's a sense of relatedness. And we can feel that relatedness, these characteristics of earth, air, fire, and water in our own bodies, the groundedness of earth, the connectivity of water, the lightness and movement of air. We can reflect on these with our senses in an experiential way and feel that connection between ourselves and nature. And I think it can be really important too to simply spend time in nature, walking, hiking, being outside, gardening, things that let us observe firsthand the changing seasons, cycles of birth and growth and death that are all around us. And sensing in those things the reality of change and impermanence. And this time in nature can be one of the times when it's easiest for us to actually bring our minds into the present too. I think many of you have felt that. Connecting with the body and with the senses, when we're outside, maybe doing walking meditation or just taking a gentle walk, being aware of sounds, of sights, of smells, the temperature of the air, the feeling of the sun and wind on our bodies. The beauty and fascination of nature can really bring us out of our daydreams and our mental world and our memories into the reality of the present moment. And I'll quote again Martine Batchelor, what she says about this ninth picture. How in this picture we're re-entering the world, where having forgotten ourselves, we are enlightened by all things, something that can happen to us in nature. As the commentary from the Columbia University says, in this picture, we begin to see that in the ordinary events of life are found the most profound truths in the nature we see every day. So let's sit together for just a moment, taking in these ideas and words. All these different ways in which nature can be our teacher. And connecting with nature can be a way to understand the Dharma and maybe prepare us for a more full return to the world. Returning to our poem of our guided meditation. You wish to know the spirit of Zen? Look at the lake in front of the gate. When the sun shines, it radiates light and brightness. When the wind comes, there arise ripples and waves. So thanks so much, everybody, for being here and for your attention. And now we have some time for group discussion in our breakout rooms. And of course, I encourage you to stay for our discussion if you are able to. If you don't feel like talking, listening is always a perfect option. Okay, so in our rooms this morning, I would suggest that you share something about your own experiences of the connection between Dharma and nature. Maybe talk a little bit about the role that nature plays in your own practice, what nature has taught you about the truths of the Dharma, and just, you know, have a sense of that connection and maybe how being in nature can be a help to you in appreciating and understanding these Dharma concepts and maybe in coming back from that emptiness of our journey with the ox herding pictures into the world of form. So, there's some time now for everybody to share anything they would like to share, maybe about what you discussed in your breakout rooms, or if you have any questions or comments from your own experience. As you who have been here before, which is pretty much all of you, know, the floor is open to whatever you would like to share with the rest of us. So you can indicate that you have something to say by holding, you know, with your little virtual hand. Okay, let's see. Judith.
Yeah. Well, what we ended up talking about toward the end of our group was the drought and the fires.
Oh.
And the ways in which nature was disappointing us, I guess, and the ways in which we have affected nature. Yeah. And how much we want it to rain and all of these things, and it's not doing what we want, and, you know, feeling trapped by the air quality, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you'd like to say something about that, something wise about that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's a really difficult subject, but it's a, I think it's an important reflection too, and not something I would necessarily have expected, you know, to come out of this discussion, but I think it's another expression of interconnectivity and the fact that our interconnected, we affect each other in positive ways, but we can affect each other in negative ways too. So, you know, damaging things we do can have reverberations in such a wide circle and can come back to haunt us as well. So it's really something to reflect on, you know. I think it makes me think, wow, you know, how much care is needed and how hard it is to do that, really, you know, with the lives that we lead. So thank you for bringing that up. That's something for all of us to think about. And if anyone else has comments, that would be good too. Let's see. Linda.
Yeah, we talked, so the part of that conversation around the, when nature impacts us, it was related to how connected we are. We can't not be connected. So, because nature impacts us and we also impact nature. So that was part of that conversation. But the other thing that we talked about was how nature has this, wonderful opportunity to sort of humble and level.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, when I let nature give me cues that it's time to just sort of pay attention, it sometimes also, I think we tend to, we can sometimes co-opt nature and use it in ways to help us. For example, if I see a bird or I hear a bird, I notice a bird that's on my walk, I sometimes can want to go home and look it up in a book and figure out what bird is that? That was a unique bird, or the call was unique. Rather than, and so we were kind of talking about how the Dharma allow, when we practice the Dharma, it gives us the opportunity to just stop, interrupt that desire to sort of co-op nature for our own benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Just pause and pay attention and take it in. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for that reflection. And that is an important part of Dharma practice. You know, that sense of being able to just be with what we see without having to rush to our idea about it and our explanation about it and making it something that I know about, you know. So yeah, that's a really important reflection. And I find that, you know, practicing in nature, walking in nature, trying to be mindful does help me to do that, to stay in the present moment. So thank you. Let's see. And Suze?
Just want to share of really what I thought was such a wise comment from one of the people in our group, that nature is perfect and not perfect at the same time.
Mm.
And as we talked about the full spectrum. And I just thought, this is perfect and it's not perfect. I just really liked it.
Yeah, I love that. And that's so true of ourselves too. So true of ourselves. That's a very, very wise comment. Let's see. And Lauren? Oh, Lauren, you're muted. You're still muted.
We kind of did the alpha and the omega. We started with just sharing about the appreciation of immediate nature and you know, seeing the beauty of it and being able to, that it really did help us be present and, was a refuge, appreciating that we live in a place where nature has is all around us, so it's really easy to have that connection. And then we talked about like places where we were thinking there wasn't very much nature, like in a big city with cement everywhere, in a prison, talking about lack of nature. But that led us to, yeah, where is nature? Well, it's everywhere, because we were thinking about the universe, and even when there are problems, like it seems like things are going to be destroyed, like maybe fires and things like that, that nature may respond and then there's new life. And I was just thinking just at this moment about when Mount St. Helens exploded, and you know, it just was, seemed like devastation, but the growth, the animals and the plants started to come back quite quickly, even though there was huge destruction. So we got way out into the universe, and you know, and it was really interesting, the different things people shared. It just felt like it went on and on. So thank you for bringing this topic up for us, because we really got a lot out of the discussion. At least I did. I think other people did too.
Oh, thank you, Lauren. You know, what you are talking about reminds me of when several years ago, like before the pandemic and all, when we were down at Soto, we did a haiku, day of haiku writing, and we were in a place where there wasn't very much nature. And yet people would go out and walk and find, you know, a blackberry vine or some little weeds or something. It's sort of like there was this way in which nature was still present, even in the midst of the city, and we would be able to write about it. So yes, nature is everywhere. Let's see, maybe one more here. We have Sean and Bruce, and then I probably should stop for announcements. So I don't know which of you it is, but whoever it is, please go ahead.
Okay. I just remembered something based on this discussion. I guess it must have been, 20-some years ago when Bruce and I lived in Southern California, and there were lots of wildfires. I mean, devastating wildfires around the Los Angeles area. And we used to hike with a lot on the weekends with a group of friends. And we found out that the wildfires, the heat of the wildfires, you're going to have to help me with this, Bruce. It did something that burst open the seed.
Mm-hmm. Various plants that only opened when there only regrew when there was fire.
Yeah, certain wildfires that hadn't bloomed for like 100 years or long time, because they needed the heat of the fire to pop open the seed shell or whatever, that I don't know what it was, but it was. And so we started every weekend going to figuring out different places that we could go to see these wildfire flowers that had not bloomed for so long. And that's just an example of how nature evolves. You know, you think there's someone in our group that brought that up too, and it just really struck me, you know, the planet may end, but there will still be some form of nature. It may not be the form of nature that we know now, but it will exist. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, that's really true. You know how a lot of those ecosystems are conditioned to have some kind of fire, you know, to keep, as you say, to open up these seed ponds and that kind of thing. And so our interference has kind of gotten this cycle out of whack. But I think what you mention about, in spite of what humans do, you know, the planet might not be as we know it, but there will be some form of nature. And in a way, that's sort of comforting, you know, to me, this, the sense that there's this larger something, and we might not be as we are in it, but it will go on. So yeah, thank you. You've had some really wonderful reflections. It sounds like you had a very rich discussions that went in ways that I would never even have predicted. So thank you. So now let's just sit together for a few moments to close. Taking a moment to share the merit of this practice with those who are near to us, those who are far, maybe someone who you especially would like to wish well, thinking of them. We know that there is a force for good that's generated when we practice together. We can share this with those we love, as well as with those we maybe don't know that are far from us, but who we can care for all the same, human beings and other beings. May all beings, whoever and wherever they are, share in the merit of our practice. May their hearts be at ease, and may they find peace. So thank you all for being here today, and hope you enjoy this beautiful Sunday with the lovely sunshine and the temperatures that are getting warmer. Really beautiful fall day.